welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Kia ora, Lara, how are you?
Morning, I'm okay, how are you?
good. Trucking through winter, I think, is the...
Definitely.
...the vibe at the moment. There's some cool things happening in Parliament this week. The Youth Parliament has convened. Now, what is this all about for folks who maybe aren't super familiar with the function of it? What's actually happening at the moment?
So the whole point of it is to kind of encourage young people to get involved in politics, and all of the different MPs around the country will look for... through various ways, a youth MP, and that youth MP will come and kind of sit in their seat. They kind of do a mock parliament for a couple of days, including the debates, and we saw some great speeches come out of that this time round. And, you know, just they kind of, it's meant to reduce some of those barriers between young people, politics, and participation, and really parliament, because parliament can be quite an intimidating thing overall.
For sure. And, I mean, it's an interesting sort of function that's been happening. Is it since the voting age was lowered to 18, I believe? So it's been happening for quite a long time now. What actually, does this have any sort of like real world impact, the stuff that happens in youth parliament, or is it all just within its own little universe?
Well, look, I think we should go back and forth on that a bit. Because some people would argue that the people who become youth MPs are often ones from more privileged backgrounds, but actually there seems to be quite a bit of diversity in those who put themselves forward. I think that it is only ultimately a small group of young people who are being exposed to this. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's not something that goes in the place of there being broader education campaigns for rangatahi. And of course the Political Studies Association always pops up and talks and others and talk about civics education in schools. So there's, you know, a range of other mechanisms that people talk about in terms of youth participation that would interest a broader range of young people ultimately. But I think that it really does give, I think if you were, I was a young whippersnapper, but, you know, you're really into it and you had some issues that you really wanted to get raised, mm-hmm. it does give you that exposure to MPs. And, like, the MPs do at least make a go at pretending to listen. I'm sure some of them do listen to the policy issues raised. It's just really unfortunate that this youth parliament was largely overshadowed by the photo of Jacinda Ardern and the Governor-General, Cindy Kiro, without a mask with the youth MPs. So that's kind of overshadowed everything this year, unfortunately.
That is a bit of a bummer, eh? Let's talk about some other things in, I guess, the youth world. I mean, other people who aren't just youths are students. But there's been a very important report come out this week that was, I guess, helmed by the Green Party. It's the Student Inquiry into the Wellbeing of Students, basically. And it's a people's report. So people sort of opted into this survey, and it's had some pretty shocking results. I think maybe not surprising to know that students are paying something like 50% of their income on rent, that they're really struggling for things like basics, like food, clothes, warmth. That is, I mean, not necessarily news, but it is pretty stark to see it written down. You teach at the University of Auckland. What were your thoughts when you saw this?
Yeah, look, I teach at the university and I've been working with the Adolescent Health Research Group on the Youth 2000 Survey Series as well. So we did the Youth 19 survey, which was in high schools, and this was before COVID. Mm. And basically, we've seen a shocking decline in mental health and wellbeing of young people with that, and even worse for kids from different intersectional backgrounds. So, like, particularly bleak results for Māori with disabilities and Rainbow young people with disabilities. So it just that was bad. Mm. Just sitting with those results, that cohort are now in university and now the students that. You know, showed that's all got all the good statistical properties, that sample, where you can't argue with it so much. This, of course, as you said, was people's a convenience sample, the kind of one that people opt into. But there's still results that you can't really argue with. Mm. And I think that there is that whole, oh, yeah, I ate two-minute noodles when I was a student. But this is actually showing, like, a real pretty fundamental problem with inequality. And I think that generally this speaks to firstly that Chloe Swarbrick is a really good MP. No matter, I think, I've heard right-wing people, like the full broad range of people say that Chloe Swarbrick is a great MP and really good at highlighting the issues that matter broadly, but also to her constituency, which, you know, there are a lot of students living in Auckland Central. But also that broadly, this inequality is going to create a lot of problems for representativeness of who's getting through university.
Mm-hmm.
The universities are pushing towards longer degrees, if anything, and so for students at the moment, and for myself actually, staying for 3 years was unrealistic. I'm 32, so I was in about 10 years ago, I left undergrad. But it was hard for my cohort,
yep.
This cohort. Like, it's actually impossible. People have multiple jobs. The whole campus culture has declined in the last 10 years as well. That kind of thing where you go and join clubs. Well, all of the people go, oh, it's so sad they're not in the clubs. I'm like, because they've got, like, four jobs.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's been some interesting criticism I've seen online, I guess, mostly, saying, oh, why is this being focused on the student population specifically? Why aren't we looking at, you know, the way that poverty is broadly affecting other groups of people? What would be your response to that? Is it important that we specifically acknowledge what's happening for students at the moment?
I think a fundamental idea in the New Zealand identity is that people get a fair go, and that we've always had that sort of welfare safety net going back to the 1930s and Michael Joseph Savage. So I think that's the whole idea that people are supported by government is something that's really fundamental to identity. And we'd like to think that students are supported as well, and that there's been sort of a progressive rolling back over the years of students getting resources,
mm-hmm.
and being able to maintain that minimum level of people attending university. Where this is a real problem is that education in a neoliberal capitalist society is a gateway out of poverty into the middle class. And if people in those working classes and people who are from whānau that don't have that access to education really can't access education, then that's not going to happen at all.
Mm.
So that's where education and tertiary education access is incredibly important, because while we shouldn't really have to go, oh, well, a few individuals can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get out of poverty, we shouldn't have to do that. It's still like one of those fundamental things at that, I guess, whānau and community level education and access to education is one thing that can pull people out of poverty.
Yes, totally. We've also got one more thing to talk about, and that is the extension of half-price transport fares from the government until next year. This has been, I guess, you know, a good thing. People are pleased to see this extended generally. There's also an ongoing conversation in Tāmaki Makaurau at the moment about could we get to a stage where we have free public transport. That's also what Efeso Collins is essentially running his mayoral campaign on. What are your thoughts about this? Is it something that is we should be aiming for, and is it achievable, do you think?
It's one of those things I haven't seen any really strong evidence against at this point. The main thing would be that it costs money, but I think all of us are quite aware that a lot of other things cost money as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those things that we haven't seen National hammer it as hard as, or the right hammer it as hard as I would expect, maybe. Like, they haven't really put it in that broader addicted to spending type ideology that Christopher Luxon and others were really pulling out in about May around the budget time.
Yeah.
So that's been one that it kind of seems like it might be have broader universal support in terms of the public, and polling shown that, but also in terms of policymakers and people generally. I think that it's probably one of those good things, speaking to, you know, youth participation and tertiary education, is that is one of the barriers to tertiary education that we see in the cities, that I saw working at AUT as a lecturer and seeing now at the University of Auckland, is that cost of public transport. So even if it's like not universal free public transport, it would be great to see some of those stepping stones in place. So for students trying to access and actually come to class, to the lectures, that public transport is free. So, you know, as a staggered approach to that would be great. And actually, again, it's one of those policies that just does seem to make sense.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. Always great to have you on the show. Have a good rest of your week, and we'll see you soon.
Ta-da, you too.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.